These are three different ways that we can give morphine. Now, this red line is the traditional way where you wait till they're in pain, and then they ask for some pain medication, so you give them some morphine. So, way up here is pain. Right up there at the top, you give them the pain medication. Then it drops them way down into here. They become mentally cloudy. They become confused. They get really bad. Then it wears off, and now they're in pain again. So they ask for some more pain medication. You give them pain medication. It comes down here. They get confused, all that again. The pain goes really high up before they ask for it. Or you're busy. You can't get to them. Is that a good way to control pain? No. Sometimes we call it chasing pain because you're never truly controlling it. You're just waiting till they're in pain and then giving them some medication. Chasing pain is not a good way of pain medication. Now, this blue dotted line represents what we would call routine medication. So rather than waiting to see, are you in pain? Yes, let me give you something. We say, I know you're going to be in pain. Let me give you something now. And you give them morphine at regular intervals. And what we do is we try and keep them in an area where there's no pain, but no mental clouding, or very little mental clouding. This is a much better way of controlling pain. It's called a routine dosage schedule, as opposed to as needed. What's the as needed word? What's the PRN? So this red is PRN. This blue dotted line is routine. Now, this little itty-bitty squiggle stands for PCA, or patient-controlled analgesia. Now, how many of you have been to the hospital recently, like the past 10 years? Okay, do you ever see someone who has a little clicker button and they get to dose themselves with morphine? So what's happening here is that the patient is getting a very small little dose, and so they stay in a very little tightly controlled area. Now, a PCA pump can be set several different ways. It can be set to where the only time it gives medication is when the person pump clicks the button. Or it can be set to where there's what we call a basal rate. So there's a little bit of morphine flowing all the time. And then if the patient needs a little extra, then they press the button. Now, which of those two ways is better? The second one is better. Because if you make the patient have to click before it does it, you're really just getting this. So what we want to make sure is we want to try and make sure the patient gets the best pain relief possible. If a patient is only on PRN medication and they're asking for it all the time, you want to ask the physician if you can change to a routine dosage or a PCA. Now, what's the problem with a PCA? Yeah, the patient clicks it, they go to sleep, and then they wake up in pain. So again, if the patient has a PCA, you want to encourage your physicians to make sure that there's a basal rate. Some physicians are just funny. They're like, I don't want to do that. You're not going to get a patient addicted to morphine in the course of a hospital stay. Yeah. Either they were already addicted or they become addicted for something else. But, in the time of weeks, most patients are out of the hospital within 4 or 5 days, even hip replacements. It's like you're not going to addict this patient by giving them enough pain medication to control their pain. So sometimes we have to enlighten and encourage our doctors to do the right thing. All right, so that is morphine. Now, if we understand morphine, we will understand pretty much all of the other opioids with just a few little tweaks. So there are some other strong opioids. Now, out of these, you need to recognize all of the names as being strong. But specifically, you're going to need to know that fentanyl comes as a patch. And it's a transdermal patch that we use for patients who need a lot of pain medication. So typically patients who have cancer, after a while, we forgot to talk about tolerance. So let's talk about tolerance for a moment. What is tolerance? Okay, in terms of pain, tolerance is how much pain you can handle. But in terms of drug tolerance, what do we mean? Okay, it's how much drug a person needs to get the same effect. So now, who here likes to exercise? Okay, the first time you exercised after you've been out for a while, but you're huffing and puffing after like 2 minutes. Then the next time, it took you maybe 5. Then the next time, 10. Now you like an hour and you're like, ha, that was nothing. Give me more. So your tolerance for exercise has increased. It takes more exercise to make you feel like you've worked out. It takes more exercise to get you all hot and tired. It takes more exercise to get you sore. So your tolerance for exercise has increased. Now, as we give a person opioid drugs, it takes more and more drug to control that amount of pain. It also takes more and more drug to cause respiratory depression. So a patient who's been on, say a cancer patient whose pain will never go away, and they've been on morphine for a while, might be on enough morphine that if we gave you that same dose of morphine, it would kill you because it would just make you stop breathing. But because they've built up that tolerance, they're going to need more pain or more medication in order to control their pain. That concept is called tolerance. Now, morphine is not a very potent drug. Now, what does that mean? No, it has nothing to do with powerful. It's the number of milligrams to get to that level. So it can give you a really good pain relief, but it takes quite a lot of milligrams. Eventually, a patient needs so many milligrams that it just becomes impractical. And that's where fentanyl comes in. Because you can give it as a patch, and it's a very potent drug, it's a lot more convenient for that patient who's got a very high tolerance to opioids. Meperidine or Demerol. Now, Demerol is a great drug in a lot of ways. It's an artificial opioid. It has very little emesis. It has no biliary colic. Doesn't make a person itch. Oh, I forgot that one. Morphine can make a person itchy. Demerol doesn't make a person itchy. But the downside to Demerol is that if you give it to a person over time, their liver breaks it down into a poison. So you only want to use it for short periods of time. Because if you give it to them for too long, that poison will build up to toxic levels in the body. Yes?
I forget which opiate it was, but do they still give it in like a lollipop form?
I can't remember. They do, but I can't remember which one it is. Yeah. Yeah, morphine. Yeah. Yeah, so you... It's for people who aren't supposed to really eat. So as their saliva dissolves it, it goes down in very small amounts. Oxymorphone and hydromorphone. What we do is we take a morphine and we add oxygen. Hydromorphone, we take morphine and add hydrogen. So there are artificial versions of morphine that are a little different. Sufentanil, lofentanil, alfentanil. If you remember fentanyl, you should be able to recall these. All you need to know is that they're opioids. Methadone. Methadone is a very strong opioid. And in addition to being used to treat pain, it's more commonly known for its use in heroin addicts and addiction detox type programs. Now, the reason methadone is given is because it's a very long acting, and so it kind of has a mild effect in terms of euphoria. It will still make people feel euphoria, but what it will do is will prevent their withdrawal symptoms, so they don't have to undergo the horrible withdrawal symptoms, but they don't get as much euphoria, and then you taper the methadone down. There's an entire chapter in the book on how to treat addictions if you want to read more about it. Heroin, again, just a very good delivery mechanism to the brain for morphine. Now, moderate strength. The moderate strength ones, we have codeine, which comes from the poppy plant along with morphine. And then if we add oxygen or hydrogen to it, we get oxycodone and hydrocodone. Now, oxycodone is considered a class 2 medication. It's more restricted than hydrocodone. Now, oxycodone gets all the news, but guess which one actually gets abused more? Hydrocodone. Why is that? Because it's easier to get. Now, a class 3 medication like hydrocodone or codeine, a doctor can call a pharmacy and say, hey, I want you to give my patient hydrocodone. And they'll say, okay. But with oxycodone, guess what the patient has to do? They have to get a physical script. So it's much more difficult to get because of that. So it's because it's not as accessible, it's not abused as much. But it gets all the press. Why? Because of OxyContin. So what is OxyContin again? Well, it's the Contin. Continuous release. Now, let's say that you have a small procedure. You had a mole removed. Does it hurt after that? Yeah. How long is it going to hurt for? A day? Maybe 2 days? So we give you some oxycodone. 5 milligrams. Take it when you need it. See you later. Have fun. Now, you're going to use that for 2 to 3 days and you'll be done. Not a big time to build up tolerance. Now, let's say that you have chronic pain. And so you've been using those 5 milligram oxycodones, and then you graduated to 10 milligram oxycodones, and now you're taking 3 10 milligram oxycodones a couple times a day, and it's just getting to be a lot of pills. So rather than give you all those, what we can do is we can substitute for OxyContin. So what we can do is give you an 80 milligram pill just twice a day, rather than having to take 30 or 40, you know, like 10 or 12. 10 or 5 milligram oxycodones. So again, it's a matter of convenience. The other thing is because it's continuous release, you don't have to take it as often, which means you're not going that up and down. You get kind of a straight, calm pain relief. Now, along comes Johnny. Who's Johnny? Johnny is the grandkid for the lady who's taking the OxyContin. He takes her OxyContin. How much was it again? 80 milligrams, 60 milligrams? And it's meant to be to provide that over how long a time? 12 hours. Now, Johnny doesn't want to wait 12 hours to get his 80 milligrams of OxyContin, so what's he going to do? He's going to crush it, and now he gets all 80 at once. Then he goes to the emergency room because he's not breathing. Or goes straight to the morgue. You know, so that's why OxyContin became so notorious, was because people were abusing it and they were getting such high doses, their bodies weren't ready to handle that, and then they got into trouble. But because you can get such a nice high dose from such a convenient little pack, you know, everyone wanted to steal them, everyone wanted to do you have any OxyContin? Meanwhile, they could have been doing hydrocodone much easier and getting the same effect. But, you know, that's kids. Okay, propoxyphene. Propoxyphene has two different names, Darvon and Darvocet. This stuff is crap. Say crap. Yeah, you're not just crap. Crap. Now, it doesn't offer very much pain relief. Actually, Tylenol works better than propoxyphene. And this Darvocet, guess what the set stands for? Acetaminophen. So when you're giving a person Darvocet, what you're really giving them is Tylenol with side effects. Okay. So propoxyphene really doesn't work very well at all in terms of reducing pain. What it does do a good job of is making patients confused, making patients constipated, and having them have bad falls or other problems because of those two things. So, as a result, we should never give our patients Darvocet. Yes. That's a whole other matter. Yeah. Percocet, which is oxycodone plus acetaminophen, there's not really a problem with that. The two will help each other. But in this case, you know, when you give Darvocet, really you're just giving acetaminophen with just bad side effects. You're not really adding any additional pain relief. So, the here's some journal articles if you'd like to see if I'm telling the truth. And actually, the Journal of American Geriatrics recommends that you never, ever ever, how often? Never give Darvocet or propoxyphene to patients who are older than 65, because all you do is you make them confused. But what I'm going to tell you is, if you ever have a chance, don't give this stuff. Now, a lot of hospitals, say a woman has a baby, physician will write an order for Percocet and Darvocet. Don't even ask the patient if they want the Darvocet. My sister-in-law, when she had her first baby, the doctor wrote prescription for both, and she'd been taking the Darvocet for like a couple hours, and she's like, I'm just hurting all the time. Like, well, what are they giving you? I don't know, these little pink pills. No, you don't want that. You want the Percocet, the blue stuff. That's the good stuff. Yeah, so as soon as she started taking the Percocet, she's like, oh, this is so much better. Yeah, but the nurse had been saying, well, do you want a strong one or a weak one? Yeah, oh, I'll take the weak one. Because people are like, you know, I don't want to get addicted. Let me take the weak one. Well, all they're doing is not controlling their pain. Does that make any sense? So are you going to do that as a nurse? No. And when I ask you on a question, you've got a patient and they're elderly, and here's the drug choices. Are you going to give them the Darvocet? No. Well, really anyone. But I mean, in terms of here, 65.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the only drug ordered, then what you do is you call up the doctor and you say, excuse me, Dr. So-and-so, did you know that the Journal of American Geriatrics recommends that? No. Well, I mean, yeah. If you don't know them, what you're going to do is you're going to say, sir, the Darvocet really isn't handling their pain, and can we offer them something a little bit stronger? Can we give them maybe hydrocodone, or can we give them oxycodone? And most of the time, they'll say sure. And if you say, you know, Dr. So-and-so, I really don't want to tell you how to practice your medicine, but yeah, propoxyphene really isn't recommended for elderly patients. Yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, you are not a peon. You are the one who gives the medication to the patient. You are God to that patient.
You told that to the doctor?
Yeah. They're no one. They see the patient for 10 minutes a day, if that. So you're the one who's in charge of that patient's pain. You know, you're the one who's responsible, has to live with yourself when you go home at night and go, oh man, we never got that patient's pain under control because I didn't have the guts to ask Dr. So-and-so for a good prescription. So. All right, you don't have to be mean. You just have to do what's best for your patient. All right, some additional drugs. Tramadol, better known as Ultram, is a drug that affects opioid receptors but is not a true opioid. It will have an analgesic effect. Some patients will cause mild euphoria. There really haven't been any real documented cases of addiction, although you know, some physicians will say, well, I know people who are addicted to it. But again, if you don't give people enough pain medication, they're going to be drug seeking, and that is not a bad thing. So for what it's worth. Opioid antagonists, naloxone, better known as Narcan. And then for general anesthesia. For general anesthesia, you really want three elements. Paralysis, we talked about. What provides that? What class of drugs? NMJ. Neuromuscular junction blockers, or neuromuscular blockers. We want something to provide amnesia, so you don't remember what happened to you. Typically, that's going to be a drug that either going to put you out completely, or a drug like Valium, which makes you forget. And then the last one is you want analgesia, so you don't feel pain during the procedure. And that's usually going to be what class of drugs? Opioids. All right. Any questions about opioids before we move on?